You're listening to the Merry Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com.
I want to live again, and I want to look them straight in the eye, and I want to tell them what a cheap, lying, no-good, rotten, four-flushing, low-life, snake-licking, dirt-eating, inbred, overstuffed, ignorant, blood-sucking, dog-kissing, brainless...
Yeah, there's a lot of bad isms floating around this world, but one of the worst is commercial. Makeup, even in Brooklyn it's the same.
That thing had nine lives, she just spent them all.
Woo! I triple dog dare you!
I don't believe you're an angel. I think you're a demon right out of...
Oh, Henry, don't say that.
Does someone need a hug?
Tomorrow is Christmas. It's practically here.
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
Sentimental hogwash.
What was the last thing you and Charlie did before you went to bed Christmas Eve?
We shared a bowl of sugar, some shots of brown liquor, played with my shotguns, field dressed a cat, looked for women.
I'm the worst toy maker in the world. I'm a cotton-headed ninny muggins.
My mouth's bleeding, Bert! My mouth's bleeding! Doo-doo pedals! Doo-doo! There they are! Bert! What do you know about that? Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Hello, this is Jeff Westover, editor of MyMerryChristmas.com and the head elf at the Merry Forums of My Merry Christmas. We are the internet's longest ongoing celebration of Christmas, now in our 20th year. In this, the third episode of the Merry Podcast, we explore the odd American tradition of Black Friday. We share the story behind mistletoe and we get a first look at Santa Claus of 2010, coming on the heels of his annual interview with the media. We will also talk a little more about some new content coming to Merry Christmas Radio, provided by My Merry Christmas and the members of the Merry Forums. And we will share a few more new release previews for Christmas music coming out for the 2010 season. We begin this time with a look at a new release of old stuff, the Blu-ray release of White Christmas, originally shown in theaters in 1954. White Christmas is not the first Christmas movie most folks even think of when recounting the classic must-see movies of Christmas. But when it comes to Christmas music, it ranks right up there with Jingle Bells, Santa Claus is Coming to Town, and the similarly iconic I'll Be Home for Christmas, which was also made famous by Bing Crosby. Many consider Crosby's version of White Christmas to be the best-selling Christmas single of all time, and for a long time, it was the biggest-selling record of any genre, with worldwide known sales to date of more than 120 million copies. Like the Christmas song penned by Mel Torme, legend has it that White Christmas was composed in the heat of summer by famed American composer Irving Berlin while in Phoenix, Arizona, lounging by the pool at the Biltmore Hotel. The ironic truth of the story is that Berlin never intended to use the tune to become the sentimental holiday theme of a generation, given the assignment to write a light-hearted, satirical piece of music that might poke fun at America's nostalgic love of Christmas, Berlin at first relished the idea. Growing up Jewish, Berlin didn't celebrate Christmas, though he had fond memories of secular celebrations marked with Christmas trees in his neighborhood while a boy. But Christmas wasn't his time of year, he liked to say, especially after the death of his son, the day after Christmas in 1928. With the stage and film project Holiday Inn pressing him, the song came about in 1940 with an original opening verse that few really know about today. Here is Bette Midler singing the first verse as Berlin originally wrote it, and her version of the song recorded in 2007.
Been such a day in Beverly Hills, LA. But it's December the 24th, and I am longing to be up north. I'm dreaming of a
When Bing Crosby first heard Berlin preview the song in 1941, he assured him that the song was a winner. Berlin and Crosby could not have known how the pivotal year of 1941 in American history would affect them. It would, in fact, turn out to be a big year in Christmas history, too. Listen to this amazing recording of a speech given by President Franklin Roosevelt on Christmas Eve, 1941, just to give you an idea of the mindset of the country at that time.
Fellow workers, for freedom. There are many men and women in America, sincere and faithful men and women, who are asking themselves this Christmas, how can we light our tree? How can we give our gifts? How can we meet and worship with love and with uplifted spirit and heart in a world at war, a world of fighting and suffering and death? How can we pause, even for a day, even for Christmas Day, in our urgent labor of arming a decent humanity against the enemies which beset it? How can we put the world aside, as men and women put the world aside in peaceful years to rejoice in the birth of Christ? These are natural, inevitable questions in every part of the world which is resisting the evil thing. And even as we ask these questions, we know the answer. There is another preparation demanded of this nation beyond and beside the preparation of weapons and materials of war. There is demanded also of us the preparation of our hearts, the arming of our hearts. And when we make ready our hearts for the labor and the suffering and the ultimate victory which lie ahead, then we observe Christmas Day with all of its memories and all of its meanings, as we should. Our strongest weapon in this war is that conviction of the dignity and brotherhood of man, which Christmas Day signifies more than any other day or any other symbol. Against enemies who preach the principles of hate and practice them, we set our faith in human love and in God's care for us and all men everywhere. It is in that spirit and with particular thoughtfulness of those our sons and brothers who serve in our armed forces on land and sea, near and far. Those who serve for us and endure for us, that we light our Christmas candles now across the continent, from one coast to the other on this Christmas Eve. We have joined with many other nations and peoples in a very great cause. Millions of them have been engaged in the task of defending good with their lifeblood for months and for years. One of their great leaders stands beside me. He and his people in many parts of the world are having their Christmas trees with their little children around them, just as we do here. He and his people have pointed the way in courage and in sacrifice for the sake of little children everywhere.
These circumstances completely changed the meaning of the song, and thanks to a heads-up record producer, the now infamous first verse of White Christmas never appeared in a Crosby recording. Crosby made a public debut of the song on his national radio program on Christmas Day 1941, and it immediately connected with the American public, who knew that Christmas of 1941 might be their last real Christmas for some time. Crosby headed into the studio in May of 1942 and recorded the song in just 18 minutes and in just two takes. The movie Holiday Inn debuted in August of 1942, making the song an Oscar winner for that year. Released to the public on October 3rd of that year, it hit number one by Halloween and held that distinction for an astonishing 11 weeks. The public response to the song shocked both Irving Berlin and Bing Crosby. Berlin took ownership over the sheet music publication of the song, never allowing the lyrics of the song to show the very first verse, which in his mind had become too mocking to a nation in a time of war. Crosby, who had enjoyed 38 number one hits with Berlin-composed material, had never seen anything like it. In his mind, it was a simple, if sappy, song that anyone could sing. A jackdaw with a cleft palate could have sung it successfully, he was once quoted as saying. One of the amazing facts about Berlin was that his talent for musical composition was completely natural. In fact, Berlin could neither read nor play a note of music, and as he composed songs, he had to have a musical secretary actually score his creations. According to the legend of the creation of White Christmas, Berlin said to his secretary, "Grab your pen and take down this song. I just wrote the best song I've ever written. I just wrote the best song anybody's ever written." The Crosby version of the song, as they say in the business, had legs. It was not only popular during the war years, but it also continued to climb the charts every holiday season for years thereafter, topping at number one 13 times from 1945 to 1962. The original 1942 recording became worn out from so much use, so Crosby was asked to recreate the hit in studio in 1947. It is this 1947 version that so many know and hold as beloved today. Never one to let a good thing die, Hollywood came calling after the war to produce a movie based on the song. The result was the number one box office draw of 1954, White Christmas, starring Bing Crosby, Danny Kaye, Rosemary Clooney, and Vera Ellen. The movie has just about as much unique history behind it as does the song, but unlike the song, the movie was a thinly plotted tale of post-war Christmas in America, where Army buddies Crosby and Kaye run to the rescue of their beloved Army general, who was reduced to innkeeping in post-war America. The movie was popular at the time, but quickly faded in the glow of the still popular song.
Gee, I wish I was back in the Army. The Army was the place to find romance. Soldiers in wax. Hey, hey, the wax who dressed in slacks. Dancing cheek to cheek and pants to pants. There's a lot to be said for the Army. The best of doctors watched you carefully. A dentist and a clerk. For weeks and weeks they'd work. They'd make a $1,000 job and give it to a jerk. Oh, gee, I wish I was back in the Army.
White Christmas, the song, as recorded by Bing Crosby, also holds some special places in American history. As the Vietnam War came to a close in 1975, Americans followed the song as a cue to evacuate the U.S. Embassy, where they were flown to safety. In 2002, the Library of Congress selected the 1942 version of Crosby's recording to add to the National Recording Registry. In addition, the classic holiday tune has had more than 500 cover versions performed by such greats as Barbra Streisand, Elvis Presley, and Frank Sinatra. Artists continue to reproduce the classic in all genres of music, making it one of the top licensed songs of all time. It has been translated into languages for enjoyment all over the world, from Dutch to Yiddish. We put together a compilation of some of the artists who have recorded White Christmas over the years and present it to you now as a contest which we will sponsor at the Merry Forums. Just go to the topic area in the front office portion of the Merry Forums and enter your best guess as to who these artists are in order. There are 15 of them. In our presentation here of White Christmas, some of these voices are clearly identifiable, but we know there are a few here that will trip you up, so listen closely and if you need to, rewind and replay. The winner of this contest will get a new Blu-ray copy of White Christmas, and we will announce the winner and the answer, ultimately, to this little contest by Thanksgiving at the Merry Forums.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. Just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops listen and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow.
I'm dreaming a white Christmas.
With every Christmas could I ride.
May your days be merry and bright.
And may all your Christmases be
as many of you know, My Merry Christmas began really as a collection of volunteer contributions from folks all over the world. What you're about to hear is another such contribution from Mary Carey, a member of the Merry Forums at My Merry Christmas. This is a preview of a feature she's put together for Merry Christmas Radio that will be playing there soon.
Are you a spug? Yes, I said S-P-U-G, spug. Well, let's see. Do you believe that it is foolish to join in giving Christmas presents to those higher up? Do you believe that it is vulgar to give Christmas presents only because they are given to you? And do you believe that it is wicked to give Christmas presents without love and common sense? In 1912, if you answered yes to these questions, you had what it took to become a spug. You could get together with four others who shared your beliefs to form a spug squad, choose a captain, and write to the Spug headquarters in New York City for membership cards and official Spug pins. Spugs were members of the Society for the Prevention of Useless Giving. According to the club's president, Mrs. August Belmont, a Spug was a person who believes in putting soul into a Christmas present, not dollars. It is a person who believes in giving only where the heart directs, not where fear, diplomacy, or the desire to keep even directs.
Mary Carey first wrote about spugs on her blog at My Merry Christmas. It was a chapter of Christmas history I hadn't heard about, and I'm sure the full story, as featured on Merry Christmas Radio, will be one that you want to hear. So tune in there soon to catch the full feature. What's It To You chorus from Bob Rivers has always exemplified for me attitudes associated with Christmas shopping, regardless of which side of the counter you find yourself on during the season. The Christmas holiday shopping season is kicked off each year in America with a classic capitalistic tradition known mysteriously as Black Friday. We follow Black Friday on My Merry Christmas because it has become a part of the modern Christmas, much like the war on Christmas or the tracking of fads like upside-down Christmas trees. Black Friday is such a tradition that we're going to cover it in two parts. This, the first part, will cover the origin and history of Black Friday, and in our next podcast, we'll get down to the nitty-gritty of what Black Friday will look like for 2010.
Wouldn't be the Christmas shopping season if the stores were any less hooter than they are, hotter than they are.
Black Friday is not an official holiday, and it is a day completely devoid of significance except for one thing, the almighty dollar. At the wee hours of the morning, as early as 12:01 a.m. in some malls, the official start of the holiday shopping season is marked by huge discounts and even larger crowds. One estimate puts the figure at 150 million people in America participating in the greatest shopping day of the year. Many employers do not require their employees to work the day after Thanksgiving. With Thanksgiving always falling on a Thursday, Friday becomes a convenient time to give people a reason to shop, and Christmas is the fuel to that fire. On the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, stores begin stockpiling merchandise, and outside their doors, people begin to line up so they can pick up some of the first early morning bargains.
The halls with advertising, fa la 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 la. 'Tis the time for merchandising, fa la 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 la. Profit never needs a reason, fa la 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 la. Get the money, it's the season, fa la 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 la.
In the 19th century, Black Friday was a term loosely associated with merchants as the day when they would first turn a profit for the year. When that day actually happened would, of course, vary from merchant to merchant, but the association of Black Friday with the day after Thanksgiving can likely be traced back to early 20th century traditions of Thanksgiving Day parades, sponsored then as now by major department stores. As an unwritten rule, the Christmas season didn't begin until after all the Thanksgiving bands and floats had paraded ahead of Santa Claus, who would officially declare a Merry Christmas for the first time to the thousands of children gathered along the parade route. It is marked as a moment in time, curiously placed just as Thanksgiving was winding down, that led to the eventual celebration of the day after as a day of shopping excess. This tradition was helped along in 1939 by President Franklin Roosevelt, who was still grappling with the stubborn economic depression when he declared a change in the day when Thanksgiving was celebrated, moving it from the 5th week of November to the 4th, effectively expanding the holiday shopping season and giving merchants more time to sell. That move did anger many people. Some refused to recognize it, in fact, and they celebrated the original date of Thanksgiving that year, calling the new day Franksgiving instead. Those same Thanksgiving Day parades are still held and sponsored by the same department stores who today have made the day after Thanksgiving the spectacle that it is. The actual term Black Friday dates back to the 1960s, when police in Philadelphia coined the term in their efforts to control holiday shopping crowds at the center of the city on the day after Thanksgiving. Doorbuster sales began in the 1970s, with competing department stores vying to get the early jump on the shopping season by enticing shoppers to arrive earlier and earlier. A Black Friday ad from Sears in 1977, for example, offered a free Craftsman screwdriver to the first 200 shoppers who showed up at 7 o'clock in the morning. Since then, the deals have only become more intense and the spectacle all that much more fantastic. It is not uncommon to hear of injuries in the rush of crowds to get through the doors on Black Friday. In 2008, there was even a man trampled to death, a worker at a Walmart in New York. For many, Black Friday is just another holiday activity. Many shop not for the bargains or even to spend money at all. It is considered by some to be merely a fun way to spend time together. Some even make it a sport to see how much free stuff they can get by going from store to store. Consequently, many will spend Wednesday evening before Thanksgiving while the pie is still cooking in the oven, gathered around a kitchen table, poring over the ads from retailers who want them to show up in the dead of night. Black Friday, as you might well be aware, is no longer just a day. It is, in fact, an entire weekend. Some stores have taken to offering special shopping hours on Thanksgiving Day, and nearly all have big sales events going on their websites through the weekend. The Monday after Thanksgiving weekend is called Cyber Monday, the online version of Black Friday. Because the selling season is shorter online due to shipping constraints, the deals online are fast and furious starting on Cyber Monday and continuing until about a week before Christmas. In the next episode of the Merry Podcast, we'll outline for you our predictions for Black Friday 2010. The spirit of Christmas has as its core pure love, and what better way is there to demonstrate a little love at Christmas than a moment or two under the mistletoe? Mistletoe in these times is quite the romantic notion. We can buy it just about anywhere around Christmas time. We grace our holiday decorations with the stuff. We even name the scents of Christmas candles with the mystical term mistletoe, even though mistletoe in and of itself doesn't have much of an aroma. So just then, what is mistletoe and where does it come from? Mistletoe is, in and of itself, a parasitic plant. That's a clinical term for calling it a little bit better than a weed. It commonly grows in the tops of oak trees, but it is the ancient symbolism of mistletoe that gives it its significance even today. Now, this is one of those stories that people commonly call a pagan myth, one of the many elements of an ancient past that has led to Christmas as we know it today. Viking beliefs of mistletoe powers were rooted in the myth of the resurrection of Baldur, the god of the summer sun. As the story goes, Baldur had a dream in which he dies. The dream alarmed his mother, the goddess of love and beauty, for if Baldur died, so too would all life on Earth. So his mother went to all of the elements, air, fire, water, and earth, as well as all of the animals and plants on Earth, and asked them to spare her son. Satisfied that she had secured the cooperation of all, Baldur was assured that he would live forever. But Baldur did have one enemy, Loki, the god of evil. And Loki found the one plant that his mother had overlooked. That plant was, of course, mistletoe. Since mistletoe neither grows on or under the ground, Loki had all that he needed to wreak havoc. Loki made a poison arrow tip with mistletoe and tricked Baldur's blind brother into shooting him. For 3 days, the earth grew dark and the skies poured rain. Each of the elements, in turn, tried to bring Baldur back to life, but none were successful, except for his loving mother. Legend says that the tears that she shed those terrible 3 days turned the berries white on the mistletoe plant. In her joy at his resurrection, she reversed mistletoe's poisonous reputation, kissed everyone who passed beneath the tree on which it grew, and issued a decree that should one ever pass beneath the mistletoe, they should have a token kiss and no harm would befall them. And now you know just about all there is to know about mistletoe. You can learn more about this tradition and others of Christmas Old and New at MyMerryChristmas.com. As we turn the page into November, there is, of course, plenty of news about Christmas. And headlining that news is Santa Claus, who reportedly left the North Pole in early August, and the world has heard little from him since. We are pleased to report that Santa has conducted his annual interview with the media, available now for your review at SantaUpdate.com. In the annual interview, Santa tells newsman Rusty Bells more about his obsession with the Chicago Cubs, why he will never retire, why tough times make for a merrier Christmas, and why he uses a whip when he's on his sleigh. The interview can be seen in its entirety at SantaUpdate.com. The war on Christmas is heating up right on schedule, and we cover all that news at DefendChristmas.com. Out of all the sites of the Merry Network, Defend Christmas is likely the most misunderstood. Many people think that we have that site to promote Christmas, and it isn't anything of the sort. At Defend Christmas, we document the ongoing battles of Christmas by pointing out the absurdities on all sides of the argument in the so-called war on Christmas. We believe there is a coordinated effort out there by some who seek to undermine the observance of Christmas in public, to push their political agendas, and we believe that there are others out there who profit from those debates by inflating them, distorting them, selling books and products that tout their side of the argument. Quite frankly, as a high-profile Christmas venue, we get hit up constantly by marketers of such products, and for years we have stayed away from them, at times even pointed out how shameful some of those products really are. That's why we're pleased to endorse a new product that gets the spirit of the season just right, we feel. And we're going to use DefendChristmas.com to promote it. MerryChristmasPen.com is a simple website that sells elegant lapel pins that simply say, Merry Christmas. Now, these pins can be worn in casual or formal settings. They're stylishly designed and make just the right statement that isn't too political, but also doesn't shy away from saying Merry Christmas. We believe that if there ever was a sponsor appropriate for the war on Christmas, it's MerryChristmasPen.com. According to a new survey tracking trends of Christmas in the workplace, 43% of U.S. companies will be foregoing Christmas parties this year in the name of fiscal prudence. The number comes on the heels of a steep drop last year in a similar survey. Despite the drop in company-sponsored parties, the survey did show that the Christmas spirit is thriving in other ways in the workplace, namely the exchanges of cards and gifts amongst workers, which the survey shows will increase 19% this year, offsetting the impact of the loss of company parties. For news and information of Christmas trends, please visit ChristmasNewsWire.com. When it comes to predictions of Christmas, it is not often that we go out on a limb, but for this next story, we hold nothing back. The song you're about to hear, we predict, will be the number one hit of Christmas 2010, and it doesn't come from Mariah Carey. It comes from the pop group Train, a group that has grown wildly in popularity over the last year or so. There is a love-hate relationship the public has with this group. Folks love them for their fun style and catchy tunes, while Others castigate their strange and nonsensical lyrics. That relationship debate will only rage a little more as this group takes their first dive into Christmas music in a big way by fronting the global Christmas marketing campaign for Coca-Cola. Their song Shake Up Christmas will be promoted with Coke on commercials worldwide, and this is one reason why we think it will be a hit. Take a listen to it.
Ho, ho, ho! Shake up the happiness! Wake up the happiness! Shake up the happiness! It's Christmas time! There's a story that I was told, and I wanna tell the world before I get too old. And don't remember it, so let's December it and reassemble it, oh yeah. Once upon a time in a town like this, a little girl made a great big wish to fill the world full of happiness and be on Santa's magic list. Shake it up, shake up the happiness. Wake it up, wake up the happiness. Come on, yo, it's Christmas time.
Now we remind you to check back with us soon for episode number 4 of the Merry Podcast, where we will explore the marketplace of Black Friday 2010 and give you an idea of what to expect this year. We will discuss the great light fights across America and talk food and decorating for the upcoming season. Plus, we'll preview our big Thanksgiving show right here on the Merry Podcast. We acknowledge the work and contribution and talents of John Schmidt, Bing Crosby, Warner Brother Pictures, The Boston Pops, the U.S. National Archives, Train, Paramount Pictures, Mannheim Steamroller, The Cincinnati Pops, Capitol Records, Stan Freeberg, Bob Rivers, Mary Carey of the Merry Forums, Christmas Newswire, Defend Christmas, and Santa Update, in the production of this podcast. For Merry Christmas Radio, MyMerryChristmas.com, and all the associated sites of the Merry Network, this is Jeff Westover wishing you, as always, a very Merry Christmas.